Let's go live to Augusta. We'll bring in our Tom Rinaldi, who was there watching all the action over the weekend. He joins us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. And certainly, Tom, there were a lot of stories over the weekend, but the two biggest are the winner, Phil Mickelson, and his personal triumph. And then, of course, Tiger Woods and what he described as a failure, though I think anyone else under the circumstances, at least as far as the play, would have described it as a rousing success. As you watched and took it all in, what impressions did you take away?
You know, I felt everything you just said was very well said by both you guys. And I think one of the things that was striking is the incredible difference between how Woods answered the question, what's your measure of success, 3 weeks ago, versus how he answered it, you know, less than one day ago. That when he got in the mix and he got in contention, guys, it no longer was about other measures of success. It wasn't about governing the return to the game. It wasn't about navigating his way through Monday press conferences. It wasn't about trying to connect it in some sense more with fans. Even though he did all of those things to the degree you wish to judge them, ultimately his judgment boiled down to his failure to win. And he was unwavering in that post-round. And I think it's an astounding thing to watch a guy fight his game that much, still break 70. It's just, you know, remarkable. I also think, by same accounts, to be out there on 13, to see Phil Mickelson hit that shot through the window of those two trees, even though he didn't go on to make eagle, to me, that shot symbolizes him as a player and why people are drawn to him.
And people do seem to be drawn to him, and I talked earlier about with Phil that he was getting basically ripped because people felt he was content at being number two. Do you get that, I mean, the sense now of him, the way he's been winning majors as of late when he had the long drought, of where he is mentally with that?
I asked him earlier in the week, in light of everything that's gone on in the last 11 months of his life, when Amy was first diagnosed with breast cancer and then a time after that, his mom, they're both being treated for breast cancer currently, what golf means in light of all those things. And it was interesting to hear him say, it means a lot. It's been a great outlet for me. It gives me a great joy and a lot of fun. And I think the game itself gave his family great joy and relief from everything that's been going on. That's one way the game served his family yesterday. And I think that's a remarkable thing, given how we like to either detract or add value to the pursuit of sport in a broader context of whatever a person's going through.
Mike and Tom Rinaldi, who covered the event for us all weekend at Augusta. And I guess, obviously, the reaction to Tiger Woods was the story at the beginning, and we would be remiss if we didn't get sort of a look back on that. Over the course of 4 days, and I'm sure you were around him just about the entire time, Tom, did you ever see anything in the galleries, amongst the patrons, as they are called there, that would have told you this was a different event from any you had seen him play before?
Yeah, I think the one thing, that's a good question, Mike, and I think the one thing I would say is his connection to them, which may be ironic or unexpected. He was more connected to them than previously. I think largely by his own effort, whether it's even something as simple as Saturday night going out to the range for the handful of fans who knew he was there and waited until the gloaming, he signed autographs for them on the way out. He took a card. There was a moment early on in the first couple of rounds where a girl was sitting on the shoulders of her dad in the gallery, and she reached out and gave him a card. Woods took the card, walked to the tee box, put the card in his golf bag, and then took a ball and walked back to the girl and gave her the golf ball during a competitive round. That's something I'm proud of, the guy I had really ever seen from before.
Tom Rinaldi did a terrific job all weekend covering for us at Augusta. Tom, thank you so much. We'll talk to you in the coming days.
You're listening to the best of Mike and Mike in the Morning on ESPN Radio Pod Center.
year's Andy North, two-time U.S. Open champion, did a fabulous job analyzing all the golf all weekend for us on ESPN. He joins us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Andy, let's start with the winner. What was the sentiment around those of you who are in the circle, as opposed to all of us who were merely fans, but all of you guys who were in the game as Phil Mickelson walked off that 18th green and hugged his wife, Amy? Everyone is well aware of the story. She's been battling breast cancer. The overwhelming emotion. What did the guys inside the circle feel yesterday?
I think everybody was very pleased for Phil and realized that he probably played better than anybody else all week long. I mean, it's nice when the guy who has been the best that week is the guy that walks away with the trophy or the green jacket or whatever they're playing for. So he played great, and it was fun to watch him play.
You know, a quick one on the runner-up in Lee Westwood. This is now tied for third and second in the last three majors. Is he missing something on that last day? Is something just not clicking for him to get past that hump?
You know, he went out and shot one under par with the lead in the major championship on a Sunday. I mean, that's nothing to be ashamed of. He's a wonderful player. You know, the thing about Augusta National and the Masters, when they set that up on Sunday for going out and shooting scores, if you don't get the half a dozen holes that they've got set up for scoring, it's hard to shoot better than 71 or 70. You have to take advantage of 13 and 15 and 2 and some of those holes that were right there for the picking.
Mike and Phil Mickelson certainly did a great job of that this weekend. And so from a historical perspective, Andy, he's now got three green jackets. The only men with more are Jack Nicklaus, Arnold Palmer, and Tiger Woods. He's won four majors. He has been at or near the top of the sport, with the exception of Tiger Woods, for basically a decade now. Where would you say, as of this moment, Phil Mickelson's historical place in the game is?
Well, Greeny, I don't have any idea. I mean, the guy is one of the top players, obviously, that have ever played. He's won 38 tournaments also besides the majors, so this guy really has got it. But I think he's going to win a bunch more. I think that he can win a couple more Masters. This golf course is so perfect for him. He has such a comfort level here, and he's so confident about playing this golf course that I wouldn't be a bit surprised if he gets at least a couple more.
Yeah, but that's what I really want to hear you say, is that he is already one of the great players of all time, which I think certainly he puts himself in that yesterday. Huge day for that. All right, Tiger Woods was obviously the story going into the weekend and to at least some degree coming out of the weekend. A lot of attention paid to some of the language that we heard from him on the course, Andy. Now, what I really want to ask you is, because the cameras are right there on him every second, the microphones are right there on him every second, and boy, did they stay on him anytime there was anything, which they wouldn't do with other players. So my question to you is, some of the stuff that we heard over the weekend, how commonplace is that? If you were walking with a lot of other players, if they all had the same microphones in their face, how commonplace would some of that language be, or was that really something that someone like you would consider over the line?
Well, as far as, let's address Tiger first. You know, what went on, I guess that was Saturday. You know, it's not acceptable. He knows that. Heat of the moment, you do things. I think he's working hard to try to get better. As a lot of people said in the press room, you know, what he said at least wasn't what he used to say. So that's improvement. And let's face it, that you get in a situation out there, you're in the heat of competition, and sometimes you don't handle it very well. There's quite a few other players during the last two rounds that probably would have had the same things happen to them.
And how about the way he played, Andy, with the 144-day layoff and everything else? Certainly struggling at times with his game the final 2 days. How much of that do you think was rust? How do you think he handled it as far as his game was concerned?
I think from a playing standpoint, what he did was pretty amazing. The one thing that I thought jumped out that you could attribute to maybe rust is that under the heat the last 2 days, he wasn't able to do the things in his golf swing you'd want to. Some of that is not playing. And he, as he said, he had some problems adjusting. During a course of a round, a player will change a lot of different things. You'll change your alignment, or you change your setup, or you might change some things in your putting as the round goes on. Just adjustments. Some days you don't have it. Your body feels differently, and you have to figure out the best way to get it around. I think that was where not playing may have had his biggest effect.
Well, it certainly was a lot of fun to watch, and Andy, your coverage was certainly terrific to watch on ESPN all weekend, and we certainly appreciate, as always, you being with us every morning through these Masters. Thank you, Andy. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys. Have fun at the ballpark today.
All right, baby.
Oh, yeah.
That's Andy North with us breaking it down, and I would agree with pretty much everything that he said. And that the answer to the question is that commonplace. I don't know that. I'll say that. I'll admit this, okay? I love the tradition of the sport. I have nothing but admiration for the game and for the players. But specifically what you heard him say on that par three on Saturday, I'm not going to use the language Tiger Woods, you blank,
yeah,
you know what
yeah.
he said? My goodness, I say that to myself out loud on the golf course all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, all the time. I admit it. Now, there aren't cameras and microphones and all that stuff around me. There aren't kids watching. And if my kids were with me, I wouldn't do it, of course.
Well, that's the point.
You know, how many other guys do it? I don't know the answer.
How many do it? But you know, you do it as a hack on the weekends. He's a professional, and you're supposed to carry yourself differently.
That's
I think
right.
that's what people are saying. You're supposed to carry yourself like a professional, and there are certainly times when a lot of people associated with the game think that he doesn't.
You're listening to the best of Mike and Mike in the Morning on ESPN Radio Pod Center.
It's our pleasure to bring in Buster Olney on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline talking baseball with us. Good morning, Buster.
What's up, guys?
It was a weekend in baseball for the really young and the really old. Steven Strasburg and Aroldis Chapman and Jason Hayward all taking some headlines over the first week of the baseball season. And then Jamie Moyer. I love all the statistics connected to Jamie Moyer, who started a game this weekend and became the eighth pitcher ever to start a game in four different decades.
Yeah, if you want a number that sort of defines Jamie Moyer, he faced, during the course of his career, Tony Perez, who's now 67 years old, and I can remember in 1995, I was covering the Orioles for the Baltimore Sun. Jamie was 32 years old, and he was dropped out of the Orioles rotation during that season, and we were talking to him after that decision, and Jamie was saying, you know, I think I've got some things I'm working on that I actually think are going to help me going forward, and I remember literally looking at him and thinking in my mind, Jamie, you're a good guy. Maybe it's time just to move on. And boy, was I wrong on that one. Now, you talked about the young guys. Steven Strasburg and Aroldis Chapman pitching yesterday, combining for 17 strikeouts in 9 2/3 innings. It's very interesting because both guys are, you know, obviously close to the big leagues, but both guys are playing in organizations that have very different approaches. You know, in terms of development, the Nationals, very deliberate with Strasburg. They have a plan laid out. They want him to work on some of the nuances of pitching. He's probably going to be in the big leagues after a sequence of starts. Where Chapman, if he shows something, and he did yesterday, he's going to be in the big leagues very quickly. And you mentioned Jason Hayward. Beginning of the week, he starts off his career with a home run, that memorable 451-foot shot in his first at-bat in his first game. And we saw right away opposing pitchers making an adjustment on him, starting to pitch to the outside corner, throwing a lot of soft stuff. Hayward struck out four times on Friday. Well, on Saturday, Hayward makes the adjustment. He starts hitting the ball the opposite way. It's a home run to the opposite field on Saturday, gets an RBI hit to the opposite field on Saturday, and then yesterday, another home run. So a pretty good first week for Jason Hayward. The fact that he was able to make so many adjustments so quickly tells you how great of a player he can be.
And how about in Minnesota? Target Field opens up today. They have their man, Joe Mauer, signed, you know, for the next old number of years. What are we expecting out of that park?
Well, how about for you, Golic, Pecos River Red Chili, steak sandwiches, Cajun pork chop, walleye on a stick.
Ha! Really?
Yeah, that's
the menu. Are they doing
the menu.
Walleye on a stick?
And here's the other thing, guys. 66 degrees today, but rain. But it's expected to be an acute hitter's park. Rick Anderson, the pitching coach, saw the ballpark, and he went to Mauer and Morneau and told them, boys, you're going to have to carry us because there's very little foul territory. It actually reminds people of Wrigley Field in terms of how little foul territory there is. And it's they actually, in left center field, which is the spot where Mauer hits most of his home runs, that was drawn in 15 feet. So it's going to be a bandbox once they start playing there.
I'll say this. I've probably been to Wrigley Field 150 times in my life. I've never seen walleye on a stick.
I'm loving that.
If they want to be like Wrigley Field, they should serve Italian beef sandwiches. Then it'll really remind me of Wrigley Field. Buster, there were a few people in Chicago who will remember fondly the Milton Bradley era with the Chicago Cubs. And so they, there you have it. Well, Milton Bradley up to his old tricks after just 1 week as a Seattle Mariner. Buster, tell everybody what happened.
Well, on Friday, he was playing the outfield in Texas, and there was a ball hit into the corner, and the fans in Texas were all over him, and he gave him the one-finger salute. And, of course, well, 1 week into the season now, the Mariners are answering questions about his behavior. And on top of that, guys, he's off to a terrible start. One hit in 21 at-bats with nine strikeouts. He's actually cost the Mariners more with his defense than he's produced at the plate. He was dropped out of the lineup yesterday. And, you know, there, when he went to Seattle, there was this sort of feeling of, well, he's going to be playing with a new team in a small market. You know, he talked about how he blamed Chicago for what happened last year with the Cubs. Think about this. Throughout his entire career, he's been surrounded by good people. He's played for and with really good people like Mark Shapiro, the GM of the Indians, Billy Bean, the GM of the Oakland Athletics, Eric Chavez and Mark Ellis were great teammates in Oakland. You couldn't have a better teammate in baseball than Derek Lee of the Cubs. You know, Jim Henry, the general manager of the Cubs, a really good guy, and it didn't work. So the idea that his behavior is going to be changed by anybody else in Seattle, forget it. There's only one person who can change his behavior, and that's Milton Bradley.
People always think that, you know, a guy can change, the grass may be greener somewhere else, but tough to change the stripes there.
All right, Buster, before we let you go, just obviously just 1 week into the season, so it's hard to draw a lot of significant conclusions, but a few teams have gotten off to good and significant starts. What have you seen?
Well, the Oakland Athletics clearly have a chance to win what's going to be a mud wrestling division in the American League West because there are no great teams. And the Athletics have really good young pitching. This kid, Brett Anderson, left-hander, 22 years old. He's now maybe one of the five best left-handed pitchers in all of baseball. They have a lot of depth in their pitching, so they're not going to go away. The Detroit Tigers off to a great start. They look like they're going to have great pitching. And I think the Yankees had a really good week because they opened up with three-game series at Boston and Tampa Bay. They take two out of three in both series. CC Sabathia, who was very frustrated by how he lost his focus on opening day, bounced back and you know, flirted with a no-hitter on Saturday, taking it into the eighth inning. Curtis Granderson, you know, a couple of home runs. So it looks like the Yankees are going to make a very strong defense of their title in the American League East.
And quickly, for those around the country may have seen it, Joe Girardi, the manager of the Yankees, said that the batter who got the hit, the catcher who got the hit off of Sabathia with two outs in the eighth inning, that that was going to be Sabathia's last hitter regardless. Meaning, if he had retired him,
yeah,
he was going to go into the ninth inning with a no-hitter intact, and Girardi is saying he was going to take him out of the game. Do you believe that, Buster? Do you think they really would have taken him out of the game three outs away from a no-hitter?
No question. You're talking about the manager who ran the Java rules. He is absolutely has adhered to the pitch counts, and Sabathia had 102 pitches through seven innings. He had Mariano Rivera warming up in the bullpen. I guess if you want to turn over a no-hitter to somebody, Rivera would be the guy. So I think absolutely he would have gotten him out of the game. As I was watching and I saw CC's pitch count going up, I was thinking, nope, he's not going to last.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
Could you imagine
that, is something.
That conversation? Buster, only the best. Thank you so much, as always. Buster, every Monday with us here.
You're listening to the best of Mike and Mike in the Morning on ESPN Radio Pod Center.
There are a lot of charity slash celebrity golf events across the country every single year, and
yep,
so many of them worthy. But there are very few that have the kind of star power and excitement that this one does. It's the Hootie and the Blowfish Monday after the Masters in Myrtle Beach, where your buddy and ours and mine, Darius Rucker, and those guys gather together so many of the biggest stars in the world from sports and entertainment and get together for a terrific golf event. And our buddy Darius Rucker joins us now to chat a little bit on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline as he's getting set to tee it off today. How are you, Darius?
I'm good. How are you guys doing? Hello?
Doing well, and wondering how much extra that you have to pay for, you know, press releases. This is the longest name ever. The 16th annual Hootie and the Blowfish Monday after the Masters Celebrity Pro-Am Golf Tournament. Really? Really, Darius, you need all that? we lost him. I'm glad.
He was offended by your question.
He was offended already. We lost him.
And I don't blame him. You're criticizing the length of the title of his golf
tournament. It's so long. It's like someone with a real long title on a business
card. This is a guy
card.
Who gets you backstage passes to his concerts.
I know.
And the first thing you do when we have him on, here's Darius back with us. Darius, you are a guy nice enough to give Golic backstage passes to your concerts, and yet we have you on, and the first thing he does is criticize the length of the name of your golf tournament. I don't blame you for hanging up on us.
I know, man. I can't. That's Golic, so you know, you hook him up, and then he's got to come down on you. That's okay, though.
That's what I do. I swing the club when I have to. All right, listen, but I want to get into your tournament. Obviously, I want to get out there. We want to play in that tournament soon, whenever we can work that out. But, you know, you are a friends with Tiger. You've golfed with Tiger, so I just would like your assessment of the weekend and watching the Masters, certainly how it ended with Phil getting the victory, but of Tiger's play as well.
I thought he played great. I thought it was one of the great Masters of all time. I mean, the shot he hit on Thursday on number 9 was one of the best shots I've ever seen in golf. But, you know, Phil went and took it, and that was great. It was really awesome to watch greatness yesterday, the way Phil played.
Were you surprised at how well Tiger played? Many people thought that with the long layoff and with all that has happened in the last few months, that it would be almost impossible for him to come back and look like Tiger Woods on the golf course, but he did. Were you surprised by how well he played?
No. You know, the thing that really surprised me was how rusty his wedges seemed on Sunday. I mean, because I thought after 4 days he'd have it dialed in and ready to go. I thought he'd play well. You know, I was one of those guys that thought he could actually win it, but I was really surprised at, like, how long he was hitting the wedge, you know, little chip shots, and, I thought he played a little better, actually.
Do you think that while we saw some of the Tiger demeanor that we normally see, and he had talked a little bit Monday in the presser about how that may change, but I think it's very hard in competition to change that. Do you expect to see that soften over time?
Oh, goodness. It might soften with age, but, you know, that fire has got to be there. I mean, I think to be really excited about winning, you have to, like, be kind of upset about losing. So, I hope he doesn't lose all of it because I think it's part of who he is.
Mike and Darius Rucker, who's with us, lead singer, of course, legendarily of Hootie and the Blowfish, now out on his own, playing country music, outstanding.
Great
Golic, I know you've been to see him.
Oh, I love it, yeah.
And he's got the Hootie and the Blowfish Monday after the Masters Celebrity Pro-Am, and you've got a veritable who's who down there in Myrtle Beach. And, Darius, we've been trying to get down there for years, obviously, with the Masters and all of that. We have a lot of commitments, but you have certainly a who's who of sports and media celebrities playing in the event this year.
Oh, absolutely. We got Jim Furyk came down this year. John Daly, of course, he's here every year. My man Dan Marino's here. Sam Jackson's here. Josh Kelly. We got, I'm going to miss some people. I'm going to be mad. You know, Ric Flair, the Nature Boy's here. I mean, how better did it get than that?
Yeah, we saw Gail Sayers and Bernie Kosar, McMahon, Cordell Stewart, Boomer Esiason. I mean, of all the celebrities that, and you've done this now, obviously, for the 16th one, Who's the best celebrity golfer out there?
The best celebrity golfer? Oh, there's some good guys. Dan's real good. Ricky Tettleton plays. He's great. I mean, his team's got like 2 or 3 pros because he's so good. But the thing is, Sam Jackson's really good. He beats me every time he plays, and trust me, he lets me know he beats me every time we play. So, you know, guys just work. I think people just love the game and play so much that every time you see them year after year, they just get better and better.
Has anybody ever, with their drive, hit a fan? Because that's my fear. If I come playing this thing, that I'm just going to snap hook one and take somebody out.
Yeah, I've hit somebody. You know, I hit somebody in the back left. Well, that wasn't any fun, but, you know, it's just the person get really hurt, so that was cool. Yeah, but I was pretty embarrassed.
All proceeds benefit the Hootie and the Blowfish Foundation, which supports the educational needs of children in South Carolina and the South Carolina Junior Golf Foundation. We're going to get down there one of these days, Darius. Thanks a million. Have a great time today.
Thank you. And we really want you guys to come, man. I hope you get down sometime soon.
We definitely will. Thanks, Darius. Appreciate
it. Thank you, man. Darius Rucker, just an outstanding guy, an outstanding golfer.
Yeah, and this tournament is just an incredible tournament that he's put on that we have to get down to one time.